This is the Iowa Arts Showcase, Iowa Public Radio's monthly performing arts program devoted to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations. I'm Jacqueline Hall Bloom. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to our Iowa Art Showcase for February. We'll de-ice your wintry blues with hot Latin tunes presented during UNI's Tall Corn and 63rd Symphonian Dimensions and Jazz Concerts featuring guest Cuban pianist Nachito Herrera. We'll taste some new concert sounds presented by the Iowa Composers Forum in their upcoming series of Winter Festival 2014 concerts. We'll hear about Simpson College's campus-wide involvement with their opera production of Kurt Weill's Street Scene, and we'll celebrate Black History Month with UNI's Celeste Bembry. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase.
Well, it's certainly an amazing experience that I never regret, especially since the first day of being in it. It's just like, you know, world-class musicians in a college setting. So you get all that professional playing, but you also learn.
Everybody should come. Everybody should take advantage of it. You've got 2 days to try to make this happen, and you're not going to get a chance to hear Nachito Herrera playing with the big band of this caliber again. So everybody should come. If you like Latin jazz, if you like big band music, if you like watching students operating at an extremely high level, then you should come hear these concerts.
UNI senior jazz studies major and Tall Corn Festival chair Nolan Schrader and Chris Mertz, UNI professor and director of jazz studies, talking about UNI's Tall Corn Festival and their 63rd Symphonian Dimensions and Jazz Concerts being held later this month in Russell Hall's Bankston Auditorium. The festival and the concerts, which will be held on February 21st and 22nd, will feature Cuban-born pianist Nachito Herrera. I'm Jacqueline Hallblom. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. Chris and Nolan share a bit of history behind UNI's jazz legacy.
You know, this has been such a strong program for so long, stretching all the way back to the early days with Jim Coffin organizing it, and through many of all the great directors that have been here in the past, and leading up to my immediate predecessor, Bob Washut, who really put us on the map internationally.
You have had some amazing people here, and you've toured the U.S., and you've played at the Montreux Jazz Festival. I mean, just incredible things.
Well, the most recent thing is last year's band took a tour to the east. We went to Thailand, and that was unbelievable. And it was a wonderful experience. The Thai people are so gracious and so interested in the music and the world's greatest hosts.
So, Nolan, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a saxophone player?
Yes, I've been playing saxophone for the longest, I think. I also play bassoon majorly here, but I've also been known to play a few other instruments, just depending on the situation.
Well, tell us a little bit about the Tall Corn Jazz Festival and everything that you've got planned, because this is amazing. You have over 1,000 kids here.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Well, this festival has been going on nearly as long as the jazz program's been in existence. I think it's in its 59th year, which would make 1955, the first year that it started. So just the length of this festival speaks for itself, but basically we have performance opportunities for as many high school bands as we can fit, and after they perform, they get a clinic by a well-known musician in the state. So they get this performance opportunity, and then they get a learning opportunity after that, and then they also have the chance to see other high schoolers and see what they're doing. So it's just a lot of good exposure and playing for them.
Tell us about this amazing pianist that you're going to have come to this year's festival.
Well, Nachito Herrera is originally from Cuba, and he's been living in the Twin Cities for many years now, and he has a steady gig at the Dakota, which is like the premier jazz venue in the Twin Cities, and he's been lighting that place up for a long time with a small group. I first found out about him through my brother, who lives up in Minneapolis. He said, "You have to come hear this guy. He's amazing." And since then, I was contacted by Nachito's manager, Rich, Freeburg, who is actually a graduate of the UNI program. So there was a little bit of a hometown connection there, too.
And you really get him involved. I mean, he's working practically the minute he gets here until he leaves.
Yeah, we got a couple of rehearsals to put the music together. And then during the competitive part of the festival on Friday and Saturday at noon, he'll be doing a clinic for the high school participants. And we'll send the kids off with some inspiration, some information, and just a warm feeling about the music.
And in addition to this, all of the three jazz bands from UNI are going to be performing, right? And are they performing with Nachito?
Nachito is only playing with Jazz Band 1, and that's on both of the evening performances, Friday and Saturday. And those shows start at 7:15 with the UNI Jazz Panthers, which is our second band, conducted by Bob Washett. He may have some special guests cooked up. A lot of times I'll be surprised to find out on the concert, you know, which of the judges he's gotten involved. He always likes to find out who's on the judging panel, because they usually try to rope some of those guys into playing a little bit. So that may very well happen. And then they'll play a set, and then we'll come out and play three tunes, maybe four. And then there'll be a brief intermission, and then we'll come back out with Nachito.
So what are some of the tunes you guys are going to play with Jazz Band 1, 2, and 3? Do you know?
With Nachito, he sent us a piece called Spain and the Twins. And he sent another one called West Side Latin Jazz. And the third one is called A Puerto Padre. As far as our own set, the plan is to play this wonderful Bob Brookmeyer composition. It's this piece called Seesaw, and it's an amazing piece. Not a lot of open-ended improvisation, but a wonderful kind of ensemble tour de force. It's really what the seesaw element is back and forth between the ensemble and the drums. So it's kind of like a little concerto for our drummer, Chris Jensen. We're also planning to play Duke Ellington's piece, Such Sweet Thunder. It's the opening to that suite. There's a whole story involved with that recording. That was an entire album done with Shakespearean themes in mind. And so that's a nice little piece. It's real short, but it's very dramatic. And Nachito has expressed interest in playing a solo piece as well while he's here. So who knows where that will go? You know, if that'll be something that's freely improvised or sort of a Fantasia kind of thing, or if he's going to have, you know, a lot of times in his open-ended improvisations, he'll bring in classical themes. So I wouldn't be surprised if some of that stuff is lurking about on the edges.
And are you doing like a small set with Nachito with the faculty?
That's not really in the cards, but I want to try to get the students involved with that as well. We've got a really wonderful student combo that's been going for 3 years now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Nolan is involved with that group. They're called the Commons Collective, and they've got a CD out, and they've got another CD coming out, and they play all their own original music. Those are the guys I want to try to get involved in the small group project. They've earned that right, because they've really, really got an original thing going.
Chris Mertz, UNI professor and director of jazz studies, and UNI senior jazz studies major and Tall Corn Festival chair, Nolan Schrader. Much of the excitement involved with UNI's Tall Corn Festival and their Symphonia Dimensions and Jazz concerts revolves around their visiting artists and clinicians. This year's guest musician, Nachito Herrera, has an incredible background that is founded in jazz and classical.
At the age of 7 years old, I started to go to the music conservatories there. I kind of started to be interested in piano. I do remember that when I was at the age of like 4 or 5, I started to play some very simple melodies, because actually my father is a piano player too. And he used to have an orchestra, which they used to rehearse in my house, actually. But at the age of 7 was when we moved to Havana City, and I started to study the whole classical piano career for 16 years until I get my doctorate degree in it. So it is a very long career. At the age of 12, I was getting ready for a classical piano competition in Paris, France. It's called Marguerite Long. And one of the pieces was required for the finalists was Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 2, which I had the privilege to play with the National Symphony Orchestra of Cuba. But right at the age of probably like 16, 17, I started to be more interested in to learn about Cuban styles, like Cuban music, because we do have what we call classical Cuban music as well. So, but at the same time, I had to pay attention to our popular Cuban music, like a son, danzón, cha-cha-cha, and those all different styles. I started to take classes with Mr. Ruben Gonzalez, which he used to be the piano player of the very well-known, famous project called Buena Vista Social Club. And also I started to take some classes with Mr. Chucho Valdez, which everybody knows is like the one and only on the Latin jazz in the world. So right with that, I started to think about how to combine the whole different styles, specifically when I was playing, and that's exactly what I have been doing since I became a professional musician almost like 30 years ago.
Nachito Herrera has three times been named the Latin Jazz Artist Winner for Minnesota, was the first Cuban musician to receive the American Heritage Award, received a Grammy with Cuban guitarist Peruching, and another Grammy while he was the pianist, music director, and arranger for the famous Cuban orchestra Cubanismo in the late 90s.
That project and that band gave me actually the opportunity to play it in lots of great venues and festivals, and people start to see Nachito Herrera playing those different kind of Cuban styles, which, you know, I miss that band a lot, believe me. That was such a great time.
And with that ensemble, you performed all around the globe.
Yes, that was amazing, you know, that they have a great opportunity to play and a whole different well-known, remarkable venues like Madison Square Garden or Kennedy Hall or London Royal International. Actually, several well-known jazz festivals like North Sea Jazz Festival in Holland, in Amsterdam, the Jamboree Jazz Festival in Yugoslavia. And I do remember sometimes get out of my country for like a 6 months. And just to give you an idea, 1998 was kind of like a long, long, long tour, which we took off out of Cuba for 11 months. We left Cuba at the beginning of January, and I back by December 23rd, almost Christmas, to spend just 4 hours with my family, because right after that, we got the invitation to be the first group of Cuban musicians going to New Orleans to make a recording with musicians there after 1959. So yeah, that band definitely gave me the opportunity to show Nachito Herrera to the world, which I really appreciated that, and I always like to mention that.
Tell us then how you decided in 2002 to move to Minnesota.
That is always a good question. Actually, it was 2001. I got the invitation of an agency. They were going to do a play called Los Rumbaleros. That was a tribute to the first Mexican family of musicians decided to move to the West Side, St. Paul. And believe it or not, back in 1940s, almost all the music they were playing was Cuban music. So they invited me to come and be the musical director of that play, and which we were performing at another venue here in St. Paul called the History Theater. Right after that, I get the invitation to do some master classes at MacPhail Center for Music. It's a wonderful music school or college here in the Twin Cities. We send the whole paperwork to Cuba to extend my contract. And then was exactly when the president, George W. Bush, decided to cancel the artistic visas for Cuban musicians. So I kind of was in the middle of decide, you know, keep working here legally or back to Cuba without having the opportunity to back to this wonderful country. I did call there. I did ask my wife, well, you know, we are in the middle of this situation. And she said, well, if everything goes okay and you have a job there, just stay. And we make this decision together. And 2 years later, you know, it took a very long process because unfortunately, you know, we got September 11th situation. So right after that, it took another 2 years for me to get reunited with my family, which they arrived in February 2003. And right now, we actually established the Nachito Herrera Foundation, which we are doing through that is actually invite students from the Twin Cities and actually musicians to play with different ensembles down in Cuba during the different events like the Havana Jazz Festivals and things like that. And also, we are planning to bring students and also professional musicians of Cuba to perform here and study in our music school if it's possible. So we are involved in these all different things, which obviously, you know, busy. But at the same time, I am so excited to go to Iowa just in a few weeks.
When you come to University of Northern Iowa, you're going to be rehearsing and performing with a lot of students, and everyone knows that you are a wonderful player, but not everyone knows about your background as an educator. Tell us about your teaching experience.
I love to work with them, and it's always amazing. I think that's one of the most wonderful awards we get in our teaching life, like a seed, like how you take in a student and start to work with, and a few months later or a few years later, you start to see the whole big, huge development, or like from the very beginning. I am definitely expecting to spend like a really great time with them there in Iowa. I have a lot of passion to work with the students, and I always like to become a part of their family. I don't like they see myself just as a teacher and I start to, you know, build a kind of wall in between. It is, for us as a teacher, it's always better become part of the family and establish a kind of teamwork, which even all people in the family are doing their job also. That doesn't matter if they are musician or not, but we need to create a whole teamwork. And for me, honestly, the most important thing is the result we always have when we get together with musicians, with the students, making in some point the inspiration of themselves to become the next generation of the different bands and orchestras around the world.
This year's Tall Corn Festival and Symphonian Dimensions in Jazz guest artist Nachito Arrera. For more details on Arrera, go to nachitoarrera.com. The Tall Corn Festival and Dimensions concerts are being held this year on February 21st and 22nd in Russell Hall on the UNI campus. Tickets are available at the door. If you'd like to get more information about the festival and concerts, go to uni.edu/jazzstudies/tallcorn. Just ahead, learn about the 2014 Winter Festival of the Iowa Composers Forum, hear about Simpson's opera production of Kurt Vile's Street Scene, and find out about some interesting Black History Month events being offered across the state. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
A lot of people kind of think that maybe that new music is, you know, atonal or modernistic or abstract. We actually have a tremendous variety of styles represented among the composers in the forum. So I think there's going to be something for everybody. And come on out. It's all free. And we just look forward to having folks from the public as well as our UI students and members.
Dr. Michael Eckert, University of Iowa Professor of Composition and Music Theory. Michael, along with the University of Iowa, is hosting this year's Winter Festival 2014 being presented by the Iowa Composers Forum. Michael fills us in on this year's festival lineup, as well as shares a little background on the Iowa Composers Forum.
The forum's been around for 27 years. It was founded in 1987 in Des Moines by seven composers who wanted to create an environment for music composed by Iowans. And over the intervening years, the forum has presented over 100 concerts and tour recitals of works by member composers.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you try to do during the year, because you have several concerts.
Yeah, we try every year to have one concert in the fall. For the last 2 years, in October, we've had a very nice evening concert at the Opus Cafe in Cedar Rapids. And then in the winter or spring, we have a multi-concert new music festival normally on a college campus. This one coming up is the first time that the University of Iowa has hosted it.
Tell us about the concert that you're going to be having this month. And you have, well, actually not just one concert, but three concerts.
Right. On Saturday, February 15th, we have two concerts in the daytime at 10:30 and then at 3 o'clock in University Capitol Center, also known as Old Capitol Mall. We have a recital hall there. And then there will be a 7:30 concert in the evening presented by the University of Iowa Center for New Music, which is directed by my colleague David Gomper, and that will be at Riverside Recital Hall, the former St. Thomas More Church, near the corner of Riverside and Park Road.
Tell us a little bit about what folks will hear that will be going to these concerts.
Okay, the first concert at 10:30 has several solo pieces. We're going to lead off with a piece by Michael Kember, who lives in Iowa City and is very well known as a viola player, and also he's composed a lot of music for viola, and he's playing one of his own pieces. It's a piece that was written last year. There will be a couple of solo clarinet pieces, one by a UI grad student and one by Elaine Erickson, who is from Urbandale and is probably the senior member of the Forum. She's actually featured on the Forum website, iowacomposers.org. There will be an electronic piece by a student at Cornell College that involves audience participation, so we're all sort of curious to find out what that's going to involve. The second concert, the one at 3 o'clock, likewise is going to have a couple of solo pieces, a piece by Jerry Owen, who is retired from teaching at Coe College and has been a real stalwart in the ICF, a piece called Grant Wood Gallery that has six movements for piano that are based on Grant Wood paintings, and Jerry's going to show slides of the paintings during the piece. The special feature of the 3 o'clock program is we will have performances of three works by student composers who won prizes in 2012 in our annual student composer contest. And there will be two of the middle school winners, a young man named Roberto Gimignani, who's from Gilbert, Iowa, near Ames, and a young man named Clayton Dryden, who is from Marion. And then there will be a string quintet by Nathan Schatz, who was the high school winner, and he's from Dubuque. So that's kind of a special thing that we're doing. And because we have this contest every year that we do, we also have partnerships with Iowa Music Teachers Association and the Iowa Choral Directors Association.
And tell us about your evening concert then at Riverside Recital Hall.
That's going to be put on by the UI Center for New Music, which David Gomper directs. We have a very unusual couple of lead-off pieces, which we don't normally associate with new music. There will be two pieces for organ, a Fantasia by Elaine Erickson and an Etude Fantasy by Timothy Kramer, who is a professor at Illinois College in Jacksonville. And then there'll be a piano and percussion piece by David Veo, who's a professor at Illinois Wesleyan. After the intermission, the center ensemble will play another piece by Timothy Kramer, a piece called Hexachord Fantasy, which is by Alan Schmitz, who's the UNI professor. And that's going to be a premiere. And then there will be two more ensemble pieces, the last one by Brooke Joyce, who's our current ICF board chair and is a professor at Luther College.
Dr. Michael Eckert, University of Iowa's professor of composition and music theory, and this year's host, along with the University of Iowa, for the Winter Festival 2014 being presented by the Iowa Composers Forum. For more details about the Iowa Composers Forum, please see their website at iowacomposers.org. Tonight at 7:30 in Newman Auditorium on the Wartburg College campus in Waverly, the Wartburg Community Symphony presents Hunter Cappuccioni, a soloist, on Bottesini's second double bass concerto. The ensemble will be joined by the Waverly Shellrock and Charles City High School orchestras. Tickets are available at the door. On Wednesday, February 26th, the Northern Iowa Symphony will perform at the Great Hall of the Gallagher-Bluedorn Performing Arts Center under guest Brazilian conductor Manfredo Schmidt. Tickets will be available at the door or visit uni.edu/tickets. Nationally known organist Nathan Lauba will present a recital on Sunday afternoon, March 2nd at 4 at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Marion. Tickets are available in advance through the church or at the door. Just ahead, Simpson's production of Kurt Weill's Street Scene. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. It's the Iowa Art Showcase. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum.
I'm Karen Impala. Each week at this time, we feature concerts and recitals recorded
throughout
Iowa.
Bringing the cultural richness of our state to your radio. Iowa Public Radio Classical.
If you like classic Broadway musicals, then this is a fantastic show to come and see. If you're a fan of the operatic classics, it's a great show to come and see. If you like musical theatre or just straight theatre within 20th century American theatre, this is a show to come and see. And I'm particularly pleased that we've sought to make Street Scene, this production, resonate with people and be relevant to a much wider group of people than those who perhaps normally just come to the student opera productions. So here's the funny thing about it. It's a very, very entertaining show. It's this huge tragedy, but it's also very funny. So there are aspects of musical comedy, I think, that are certainly not just there for light relief. They're somehow part of the drama. Although they are light relief, they're very much part of a unified whole. And you come in and enjoy the singing and the dancing.
Assistant Professor of Music and Larson Chair of Opera at Simpson College, Dr. Bernard McDonald, talking about his upcoming production of Kurt Weill's Street Scene. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum. In addition to having over 50 Simpson students in the cast, Bernard is happy to announce that there will be a guest stage director for their production.
We have a very gifted rising star in opera stage direction. Mo Zhou is her name. She is from Nanjing, China, originally. American educated at Bowdoin College in Maine and Columbia University. And now she's making quite a significant name for herself directing Western opera. And she has a very interesting take on the opera. And this is actually a coincidence in many ways, but since the opera is about immigrant communities, we're in the kind of unusual situation that it's going to be directed by an immigrant, and actually, I have to say, also conducted by an immigrant. So what this is actually doing is providing a catalyst for a series of events that we hope will bring Weill's work to a broader audience, not just the usual opera goers at Simpson, but we're planning an extensive program of other interdisciplinary activities, which will bring more attention to the production, certainly on campus, and will use the opera as a vehicle for exploration in the liberal arts. So it's a campus-wide event, not just an opera production.
And what do you hope to incorporate with this performance and bringing these other elements in?
Well, we have a few things planned. There's a sociological, historical, and some film tie-ins as well. We're going to have a couple of film showings, no doubt, of Street Scene, the movie, and some other things. And we're also going to tie it in with our March to End the Isms, which is an anti-discrimination platform. So for the first time, we're having a genuinely cross-campus examination of matters that the opera raises, which I think is exactly what opera should do. It should be meaningful, and in an academic environment, it should provide the impetus for study in other disciplines. So what are those themes? Well, it's a product of a German-Jewish-American composer, Kurt Weill, who came to the United States in 1935 and I think settled in 1937. He'd already escaped Germany in 1933 when Hitler came to power and stayed in Paris for a couple of years. It's also the product of a Pulitzer Prize-winning Jewish-American playwright, Elmer Rice, and an African-American poet of great renown, the great Langston Hughes. So this creative team in itself is a very interesting group of people. And since it's set in a steaming hot summer's day in a poor tenement building and in a poor neighborhood in New York City, it does raise questions about how people from different ethnic backgrounds and cultural backgrounds coexist. It raises questions about intolerance, violence, racism, sexism, there's alcohol, There are questions about immigration and urban poverty. And of course, there is also love found and love unrequited. So it's a very provocative and yet extremely popular work that I think cannot be ignored. So we are aiming to make it an intriguing addition to Simpson College's traditional liberal arts curriculum, reaching students from multiple disciplines who might otherwise never be exposed to either opera or the works of Kurt Vile. And I should add that the Kurt Vile Foundation for Music is supporting the production.
Bernard continues discussing the history behind Street Scene and details about Kurt Vile.
Vile was active in Germany as a young professional. He also worked for a while as a Kapellmeister in the Opera House, so he was surrounded in the late 19th century, early 20th century German kind of post-Wagnerian romanticism, and he is able to write with great facility in that idiom. And at the same time, he's got this conscious attempt to add a kind of common touch, a musical vernacular. And he tries to, with great success, I think, synthesize these disparate elements. And as a Jewish composer writing music, not only that was inflected by jazz, he was writing what eventually the Nazis would term degenerate music. So indeed, after he left Germany, his music would doubtless have been banned. He and Brecht, and also when he came to America, his American collaborators, were all politically left-leaning. You know, this was the time, you know, leading up to and after the Wall Street crash and worldwide depression, where socialism seemed to be the promise for so many societal ills. And certainly using the theatre as a means of criticising the excesses of capitalism is something that resonates right through into the Street Scene in some ways. The life of Vile kind of is part of the story of Europe and America of the first half of the 20th century.
You had mentioned that he was working with Elmer Rice and Langston Hughes on Street Scene, and that was one of the main things that he really tried to work with the most cutting edge and best other artists and collaborate with those people, and that is very evident in the Street Scene.
Yes, you know, Rice himself was born as the son of a German Jewish immigrant. So originally named Reitzenstein, the name was Americanized or anglicized to Elmer Rice. And he was a very prolific playwright, and he was the son of a revolutionary thinking father who immigrated to the US and, funnily enough, went into business. So Rice was concerned about freedom of speech. He spoke openly about the dangers and ills of fascism. And in the 50s, he spoke out about McCarthyism. So Rice, in some ways, shares a lot with Vile, both in his ethnic geographical background, you know, family history to some extent. And Hughes, of course, is the leading African-American poet of the first half of the 20th century, or perhaps of the 20th century, considered, you know, the leader of the so-called Harlem Renaissance. It's very interesting to me that these three basically quite different men worked together on this piece. And one of the things about the play itself is that there was no leading role for an African-American, and Langston Hughes essentially introduced a character, Henry Davis, who has a musical number, a blues number in it. So that character was added by Langston Hughes to give it more diversity. It's already quite a diverse cast. So three very interesting men, very different men, I think, from each other. And actually, Brecht, going back to 20 years previously, was also an extremely different person from Vile. So it's kind of interesting how, despite their differences, they worked together collaboratively to produce this work. So Street Scene is an American opera by a German. And the people in the cast are all immigrants. And some of them bring with them shocking prejudice about the other ethnic groups. And, of course, some of them don't. So the piece is a great kind of epic tragedy about very ordinary, poor people. And, of course, that's something that Vile he did in the 20s, and he's doing it now in America in the late 40s. The piece was first performed in 1946 in Philadelphia, and then premiered in January 47 in New York City.
Bernard shares details about Vile's street scene music and unravels the plot.
It's a very simple story set in and around a tenement building in a very poor, working-class immigrant neighborhood of New York City. It's summer, it's sweltering heat, and the plot centers around gossip that a married woman, Mrs. Morant, is having an affair with the milk collector, the guy who comes around the neighborhood collecting money for the milk delivery. So the husband finds out, Frank Morant, the husband, finds out about this gossip, and in the end, he finds them together and shoots them both. So it's a neighborhood tragedy. That's one aspect of the plot. Another aspect of the plot is that Frank and his wife's daughter, Rose, is a friend of Sam Kaplan, who is the son of a Russian-Jewish kind of wannabe intellectual in the neighborhood. And both Mr. Kaplan and Sam are subject to racial prejudice of various kinds. But there's a love between them, which after Anna Morant dies, when she's killed, Rose realizes she has to leave New York. She just can't stand it. And as a result, that relationship never comes to anything. And Sam Kaplan is a bookish, intellectual, young Jewish boy who's lost, completely lost. And it's really quite heartbreaking. It's so well set musically, all of this. When she leaves, he's devastated. So that's a kind of subplot. There are other subplots which are essentially quite a bit of comic relief. They all come from different places. There are certain of them, Mrs. Jones in particular, who is viciously prejudiced and racist openly, just about everybody to their face. That nastiness is balanced somewhat, certainly by Mrs. Morant, who is the most understanding, you know, really the nicest person in the cast. But the other immigrant women are fabulous gossips, and the gossip is set to music, and they say all sorts of nasty things about what Mrs. Morant is up to. There's a terrific number about ice cream where Lippo Fiorentino, who is obviously an Italian immigrant, married to a German woman, Greta, and he sings about the glories of American ice cream and all sorts of American foodstuffs, which are, of course, immigrant foodstuffs. So there's the ice cream sextet, which is a hit number. So that's the plot in essence. And what is, I think, interesting about how this is told in music is the variety of musical styles. So we have the blues that's sung by Henry, who's our African-American janitor. You have Frank Morant, who is the husband who believes his wife is having an affair. He's actually a theatre technician, a hard-working man, and his music is usually a kind of Stravinsky-style, primitive, kind of brutalist music with harsh dissonant chords. There are Broadway numbers, Wrapped in a Ribbon and Tied in a Bow, which is about a girl graduating from high school, which is straight out of 1940s Broadway style. There are moments of Richard Strauss and Schoenberg, and even chords in their kind of chromatic complexity are like Alban Berg, but they're all clothed in language that is really understandable and popular. The other thing about the musical structure is it does contain, you know, arias, duets, trios, quartet, sextet, a couple of big choruses, a terrific song and dance number, Moon-Faced, Starry-Eyed, and also notably one huge multi-section aria for Mrs. Morant, where she sings about her life as a housewife.
Dr. Bernard McDonald, Assistant Professor of Music and Larson Chair of Opera at Simpson College. Simpson will present Street Scene by Kurt Vile on February 28th and March 1st at 7:30 p.m. at the Blank Performing Arts Center on the Simpson College campus. To learn more details about this production and how to get tickets, please go to simpson.edu/opera or call 515-961-1637. Just ahead, learn about Black History Month events being held in Iowa. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. Welcome to Iowa Public Radio's Performance Iowa broadcast.
Hi, I'm Kurt Snook on the choral tradition. Today,
welcome to University Concert. I'm Karen Impala.
Bringing the cultural richness of our state to your radio, Iowa Public Radio Classical.
February marks Black History Month, which recognizes and pays tribute to the important role that Black Americans have played in U.S. history. Every U.S. president since 1976 has officially chosen February as Black History Month. Today, we have the honor of joining us UNI's Student Recruitment and Retention Coordinator for the College of Humanities, Arts, and Sciences, Celeste Bembry. Celeste will be helping us celebrate Black History Month in Studio One on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase with special poetry selections and spirituals. And together, Celeste and I will talk about several Black History Month events across the state that you won't want to miss.
Thank you so much, first of all, for this wonderful invitation to be a part of the Iowa Arts Showcase. I am honored to be here. And so I'm presenting an excerpt of the Still I Rise poem by the great Maya Angelou. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may tread me in the very dirt, but still like dust, I'll rise. Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I am a black ocean, leaping and wide, welling and swaying, and I bear the tide. Leaving behind the nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Bringing the gift that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slave. I rise, I rise, I rise.
Celeste Bembry, and that was a wonderful poetry selection from Still I Rise by Dr. Maya Angelou, who is globally recognized as a poet, novelist, educator, producer, actress, historian, filmmaker, and civil rights activist. Celeste, you also have another selection for us.
Yes, I do. In keeping with the celebration of Black History Month, having traveled singing spirituals with the Albert McNeil Jubilee Singers, a professional ensemble out of Los Angeles, I just want to bring some melodies that were used not only during slavery times, but this particular song was used during the Civil Rights Movement, and just give a sampling of that.
Don't you let nobody turn you round, turn you round, turn you round. Don't you let nobody turn you round. Keep on a-walking, keep on a-talking, marching up to freedom's land. Don't you let segregation turn you round, turn you round, turn you round. Don't you let segregation turn you round. Keep on a-walking, keep on a-talking, marching up to freedom's land.
Celeste Bembry, UNI's Student Recruitment and Retention Coordinator for the College of Humanities, Arts, and Sciences at UNI. And Celeste just performed poetry selections from Maya Angelou's poem, Still I Rise, and her own special setting of Don't You Let Nobody. Celeste, you were just telling me about a really fabulous festival that was being held the weekend of February 14th in Des Moines.
Yeah, this is the 16th annual African-American festival that is held each year in Des Moines, Iowa. It's called I'll Make Me a World in Iowa, and it's an exciting festival that's traditional with what people find when they go to cultural festivals. You're going to find great food, in particular the sweet potato pie and the pound cake. So those things, those treats are there. Art vendors, beautiful paintings and drawings, creative arts. There's a health fair. The Friday event is educational, so students will be there to learn about African-American contribution to our culture. And then Saturdays are for families, so any and all are welcome because we are Americans together celebrating this rich history and contribution.
Wonderful opportunity, and that's the weekend of February 14th and 15th, and that's, I believe, at the Hy-Vee Hall.
That is correct, the Hy-Vee Hall, downtown Des Moines. And for more information, you want to go to the website, Google World in Iowa.
Also, that very same weekend on Saturday in Marion, Iowa, at a historic home there, the Granger House, which is also a museum, that starts at 1:30 on February 15th. They're going to have stories of the Underground Railroad. So if you want to get some more information about that event, you can go to their website at marionmuseums.org. Well, another famous and very important Black American was Langston Hughes. And Hughes wrote novels, short stories, poetry, plays, and was recognized for his involvement with the jazz world. And he's known for his artistic contributions to the Harlem Renaissance in the 20s. Langston Hughes also served as an important collaborator with Kurt Weill on his opera Street Scene, which is being produced later this month at Simpson College. And Celeste, you have a selection of the poetry of Langston Hughes.
Yes, I do. I have a couple. And this one, Freedom's Plow, is quite lengthy. So because of our time constraint, I'm just going to do an excerpt of that one as well. So please enjoy. Freedom's Plow by Langston Hughes. A long time ago, but not too long ago, a man said, "All men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among these life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." His name was Jefferson. There were slaves then, but in their hearts the slaves believed him too, and silently too, for granted that what he said was also meant for them. It was a long time ago, but not so long ago at that. Lincoln said, "No man is good enough to govern another man without that other's consent." There were slaves then, too, but in their hearts the slaves knew what he said must be meant for every human being, else it had no meaning for anyone. Then a man said, "Better to die free than to live slaves." He was a colored man who had been a slave but had run away to freedom, and the slaves knew what Frederick Douglass said was true. And nobody knew for sure when freedom would triumph, or if it would, thought some. But others knew it had to triumph. In those dark days of slavery, guiding in their hearts the seed of freedom, the slaves made up a song, "Keep your hand on the plow, hold on." That song meant just what it said. Hold on. Freedom will come.
Keep your hand on that plow. Hold on. Hold on. No one, no one let me come in. The door's all fastened and the window's pinned. Keep your hand on that plow. Hold on. Hold on. If that plow stays in your hand, land you straight to the promised land. Keep your hand on that plow. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Keep your hand on that plow. Hold on, keep your hand on the gospel plow. Hold on, keep your hand on the gospel plow. Hold on, keep your hand on the gospel plow. And hold, hold on.
That was was wonderful, Celeste. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Celeste Bembry, our Studio One guest today, just performed the poetry selections a long time ago and Keep Your Hand on the Plow from Freedom's Plow by Langston Hughes. And then we were treated to that wonderful a cappella singing. Celeste, you were saying earlier that the Waterloo Public Library was going to be hosting some special Black History Month events.
Yes, I understand that on their schedule for Sunday, February 16, at 2 p.m. at the Waterloo Library, they are featuring The Butler. This is a film that recounts the life of an illustrious career by a Black man. He was the butler to at least five presidents, and it's played by Forrest Whitaker, a consummate dramatic actor, and also Oprah Winfrey is in the film as his wife. It is an outstanding film, and I encourage us all to go see that.
And if you want to get more information, you can go to their website at waterloo.lib.ia. And there's so many wonderful things that are going to be happening across the state. So make sure you check your websites and keep Googling to look for different events that are happening.
Also, in February 27 and 28, you and I, the College of Education, is holding their third African-American Children and Families Conference. And there is a registration process. There is a fee, but the conference is open to all, but you do have to register to attend.
And I think that's at UNI's Schindler Education Center.
That is correct.
So a wonderful opportunity there. And also in Dubuque, the African American Museum of Iowa is presenting Behind the Beat, and that will be at the Multicultural Family Center in Dubuque, and that's on Monday, February 17th. At 6 p.m. And if you want more information there, go to mfcdbq.org.
I have one at Antioch Baptist Church in Waterloo at 426 Sumner Street. There's the Wade in the Water event. Wade in the water. Wade in the water. Okay, I'll stop. In celebration of Black History Month, and it's going to be an outstanding program, a musical, so people will really enjoy that. And the event is free and open to the public.
Isn't it fun having Celeste here? Well, Celeste, you have one last short poetry selection for us. Tell us about what you're going to present.
Yes, again, this is a sampling of the body of works by the illustrious Langston Hughes, a Renaissance man from the Harlem Renaissance period. And this particular short piece is called I Too Sing America. I too sing America. I am the darker sister. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes, but I laugh and I eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow, I will be at the table when company comes. Nobody dare say to me, eat in the kitchen then. Besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I too am America. Thank you.
If I can help somebody as I pass along, if I can cheer somebody with a word or song, if I can show somebody that they're traveling wrong, then my living shall not be in vain. Then my living shall not be in vain. Thank God, my living shall not be in vain. If I can help somebody as I pass along, then my living shall not be in vain.
Isn't that true? Isn't that so true? Thank you so much to be a guest on the Iowa Arts Showcase. I am privileged.
Well, thank you. The honor is ours, and we have been very honored to have having with us today the UNI Student Recruitment and Retention Coordinator for the College of Humanities, Arts, and Sciences, Celeste Bembry. And Celeste, thank you for helping us celebrate and commemorate Black History Month and for letting people know that there's so many things happening across the state, and we encourage them to check it out and try to go to some of our events.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. It's been great to have this discussion and be a part of featuring the activities going on this month.
You're listening to the Iowa Arts Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. To find out more information about concerts in Iowa, Iowa Public Radio has an events link on our website homepage at iowapublicradio.org. Not only can you find out about events across the state, you may also add your own concerts and events to our site by clicking on the Add Events on the Events page. Today's Iowa Arts Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Program thanks for this production goes to Nachito Herrera, Chris Mertz, Nolan Schrader, Michael Eckert, Bernard McDonald, and Celeste Bembry. Program assistance was also received from John Valentine and Brooke Joyce. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's Tony Daner. Thanks for this show also goes to IPR's Phil Moss and music director Al Scherz, along with IPR's Eric Jordan, Jason Burns, Garrett Van Leeuwen, and Cooper Holmeyer. Program research was provided by IPR's Nick Carlo and Tressa Glass. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.